this computer. Hey guys, Jennifer Hobbs here, your host of Celebrate the Struggle, where I have stepped into the unknown and got over all the fear of getting my own podcast so that I can have a place where other people can share their stories of struggle and triumph and perseverance. And today I have the pleasure of speaking with CJ Ives Lopez, who is the founder and host of Author's Porch podcast and magazine. Sheesh, drop the mic there. Podcast and magazine. Okay, CJ, take it away. Let's hear about you, where you come from, and how in the world you got to be in this place where you are now the founder and host of a magazine and a podcast.
Yeah, so I chalk it up to basically just not knowing how to shut up very well.
I like it.
No, but you know, I never in a thousand years thought I would be here, because growing up, I grew up half in the country, half in the city. That makes me halfway nuts and halfway sane, I call it. So certifiably a little bit, but no, and I never fit in anywhere. I graduated with a 1.7 GPA because I didn't care about school, because nobody cared about me. At least I felt that way. My grandma raised me more than my parents did because they were too busy trying to get their shit together. Excuse me if I can't.
No, maybe go for it.
Bleep that out. Okay. And my sister was too busy running around dating boys and getting into drugs. So I was on my own, you know. I stayed at home more times than I stayed with anybody. And at 10 years old, I remember getting $5 and saying, get your dinner, because everybody was going to be gone for the night. And this is why I still love McDonald's today. I went to McDonald's and I would play in the Playland with my Happy Meal, you know, going on that little, you know, the little round thing that you yeah. would go real fast.
Uh-huh.
And I would walk up to McDonald's, you know, and I would get my McDonald's and I'd play there. And then I'd go home and I'd fall asleep until my grandma came home at 7 a.m. with breakfast, because she was my rock, you know? So, I mean, I never thought I'd be here. I thought I'd always be in this one bedroom place with my grandma, because she was everything to me, until at the age of 19, where I said, I can't be here anymore. Everybody yells, everybody screams, everybody fights. My sister's on drugs. My mom's drunk. My grandma is depressed and sad, and everybody, all they do is yell at her. And I wanted to give something back to her. So I left. And I said, this can't be all there is to life. So I joined the military, and, you know, what is it today? The 10th?
Yep.
Two days ago was my 25-year anniversary that I left home. So I spent 20 years in the Air Force, and then I retired and couldn't figure out what I wanted to do with my life again, and started writing books and didn't know how to shut up. Still don't.
Wow. Like when you start to tell the story, I, you know, can't help, just because I'm human, to like feel like saddened, like, oh my God, this little 10-year-old going to McDonald's. Like, and I could just see it all in my head. But then at the same time, I see you right now talking to me on this podcast. And so it helps to take away some of that like sympathy, and to see how those struggles have brought you to this point and have shaped you into the person and the purpose that you have. So you served in the military for 20 years. And then when was it? Have you always liked to write?
Yeah, honestly, I look back and I say that, and when I was in middle school, that there was I wrote a short story, and I put my heart and soul into it because I enjoyed it, and I didn't really pay too much attention. But that moment in school, for some reason, a light went off, and I took it and turned it in. And my teacher said, this is really good. And it was the first time, and she said, you should do this more. And it was the first time anyone had ever believed in me. And I thought, wow, like I was good at something. I mean, at home, I was told I was a fat, ugly, redheaded bitch, because that's how everyone talked to each other. That was just our love language, I guess you would say, for lack of better words. And here was somebody saying that I was good at something. I thought, wow. And I look back and I was writing poetry and stuff as a teenager, but didn't know that it was poetry. I was writing short stories, and there was always things in my head that stories were just happening in my head, like, and I would daydream and something would happen, and in my head, I would continue the story. You know, I would play out a whole scenario. There'd be a whole book written in my head, but I never realized that I wanted to write. That was never something I realized was an option for me because I just never got it in school. I never understood a lot of things in school. And I didn't know why. And it was because I didn't find out until, hell, until I was in my 40s that I have ADD. So it didn't make sense why school just didn't make sense to me because I have these squirrel moments and I'm everywhere.
Did you by chance keep that first piece that that teacher, the first piece that someone recognized?
No, actually, I didn't, but I do have the poetry that I wrote when I was a teenager, and I look back and I'm like, oh my God, I was so emo-like. It's all love poems, right? I'm like, oh, my heart, be still my heart, even though he loves you, even though it hurts, stand right beside the one you love. Like, those are the actual words. I think I was 12. I was in love with this boy named Alex. Yeah.
He sounds like
Anyways.
a jerk. Just
He
kidding.
was. He was mad because I was a tomboy and I hit him over the head with a log and his eye busted, and that was his eye's fault
Yeah,
for
what a
being so sensitive. Like,
sissy.
hello. My husband now would have hit me back with him, but like, oh, we're on this ride together. But yeah, I mean, yeah, no, I didn't keep it. We moved every 6 months because my mom, she says, this is so funny. She says, I wasn't an alcoholic. I was just a town drunk. And it's funny now, but looking back as a child, it wasn't funny, right? So I don't have childhood memorabilia because all that stuff every 6 months was thrown out to move to a new place. And it wasn't my grandma's fault. My mom would get us kicked out, or she'd get in a fight with some boyfriend that she had. And I can remember at 5 and 7 years old, my mom got into a fight with the man that she married after my father, and my sister jumping on his back with a knife, trying to fight him off. And I sat in the corner, curled up, because that was my MO. You know, my sister was the fighter, and I was the one who was like, oh God, what is happening? And he threw my sister across the room, and that was the night my mom finally escaped him, you know. But that's kind of what my mom always did. So, and she would leave with us and leave all of our stuff behind. And so we don't have childhood memories and all that stuff.
I just had asked because when I was younger, I had won a young author's thing, and I never kept that. And I don't even know what I don't remember what I
Yeah.
wrote about. But this is a crazy question, but I find that really interesting and creative how things would happen around you and in your head, like you would come up with a continuation of a story or an ending to what was happening. Did your mind and your body do that with those devastating traumatic events?
Yeah, I always separated from it, you know, I always separated from every place that I was at. Like, I would be physically here, but my mind was always somewhere else. And it was how I coped with life in general. And I think it was one of the main reasons why I survived all the trauma growing up, how I survived the stuff that I dealt with in the military, how I survived the domestic abuse from the kid's father, and things like that. It was my coping mechanism. And I never realized that it was how I coped until I retired and there wasn't trauma around me anymore. And I had to sit and sit with it. And I was like, I
Is that
felt
when you
like the
started
wall.
writing?
That's when I started to publish my books. I retired in 2017, and 2018 was when I just started going at it. Like, and I couldn't stop. It was like, I've since 2018 to now, I have 22 books published.
Wow.
And I have so many folders of
Oh
books.
yeah,
It's
I
like,
just Googled
yeah, it's like all these stories, all these characters are like, I've been waiting. I'm not waiting anymore.
Wow.
But I did have to go and talk to somebody because it was like this flood of emotions that I had stopped myself from having for a long time, because I didn't know how to deal with it. So I separated myself from the situation. My mind went into, going down this rabbit hole of the story or whatever. So I was yelling earlier. So I'm 15-year-old boy right now. But yeah, and I've got all these folders. I've got at least 20 to 30 folders of half-written stories. And I'm like, if I didn't have to do all this other stuff, which I don't have to, but I want to, if I didn't have all this other stuff to do, I would just write.
What do you typically write? Is it fiction?
Everything. I've got 14 or 15 children's books. I've got two or three contemporary
Oh, I see the
romance.
children.
I have a mindset workbook to help people change their mindset, to learn how to change their habits and understand that their choices are the things that make their minds, their circle of influence, their choices, those things. I'm writing a self-published author's journal, which is basically what a self-published author goes through and some things to help other self-published
That's
authors.
good.
So yeah, a plethora of things. I'm co-writing a serial killer novel, and I'm authoring my own serial killer novel. So just a little bit of
Well, holy
whatever comes
balls,
up.
CJ. Like I told
Yeah.
you before I pushed record, I typically get the opportunity to do a little bit of stalking. I know you and I are a part of a couple of groups on Facebook, and I have had the opportunity to see a bit of you on there, but I didn't get the opportunity to go stalk you just so I could be a little bit more enlightened. So just to simply do a Google search of your name and see all these books come up is like, wow, I'm in the space of a, like you're on Goodreads. Other than myself, I've never met, maybe no one has come out and told me that they're, surely I've met someone that's on Goodreads, but you're on Goodreads. Wow. Like,
Well, I did a little stalking of my own before I came on because I was like, I need to know more about Jennifer. And I was like, I cannot believe somebody did a book report about your book. Like,
oh
I was like, oh my God, she's famous. Like, people are doing book reports about her.
I know. Like, it hasn't even been a year since my book has published, and a middle schooler is doing a book report on my book. Did a book report on my book. Oh man, yeah. That is
That's super cool.
fantastic. Yeah.
I love that.
I know, I know. So how long you said you ended up having to, after I believe your words were like you're holding all of this stuff in that needed to be dealt with, and then it was finally time to deal with it. I think you said you had to go, you went and seen someone, is that right?
Yeah,
How long was it like that, or what was it that like triggered like, all right, I got to do something about this?
So I knew for a whole year that I was retiring. Mentally, I was still full on military. I loved it to the core. Like, I was 19, the military raised me. I was number one non-select for E8, and they told me the next year I was going to make E8, no problem. I was eventually going to be an E9, all that stuff. I was there, but physically I couldn't do it no more. I had a lot of physical ailments that was telling me you got to go. Like, there's no fixing what's going on with your body. You need to leave. So I was coming to terms with that, and I knew a year out that I was retiring because I had my retirement papers all done. So I was applying for jobs and I got accepted to a position at a local community college. So I had a job. I had everything and I thought I was okay. I was transitioning. I left the base on a Thursday and the next Monday I started my job at my civilian position. And I thought everything was great. I was having so much fun. And it was about, so I started, that was January. And by April, when we went on spring break, I mean, there was things that started coming up here and there. I was having some like really rage moments. I was in traffic and I was just, oh, I was really, and I'm a really like nice, like happy-go-lucky person. I don't know if you ever see my CJ in the morning videos. I'm like, hey, good morning, 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm just happy. I got my coffee. Everything is great. But I was in my car and I was just raging against the machine for no reason. I would come home from work and my husband would be like, hey, how was your day? I was like, you're not going to believe this. Oh my God. Oh my God. And I was just going at it. And then spring break happened and I had a whole week off and I thought, okay, well, I just need a break. Maybe I didn't take enough time in between the two and that's what's happening. I'm just dealing with civilians, right? And no, I laid in bed for that entire week. Why my husband and his family, a family friend, and his dad screened in our back porch to make me more comfortable against the mosquitoes. And I says, hey, can I help? Because I worked with civil engineers the whole 20 years. I could pick up a hammer, you know? And they're like, no, it's okay. You relax. And I thought, well, I guess I'm useless. And then that thought just got in my mind. I'm useless now. I walk into my civilian job. I get pushed to the back of the room. I'm not even invited in most meetings. And if I am invited, I'm told to sit down and don't say anything because I don't hold a high enough position to even be able to speak in meetings. And it wasn't their fault. I didn't hold a high enough position, but I wasn't used to that because I had been an E7 in the military. And even in the Air Force, at least, even the E1s and E2s are allowed to speak because their voice matters. And, you know, I didn't fit in. I didn't, nothing. I laid in my bed for that whole week. And the kids wanted to talk to me because they were in high school. And I was like, I don't care. Just go ask Rudy. I don't care. And I thought, I just don't care. Like, I don't have a purpose. Like, what is the purpose for being here? My husband don't need me. My kids don't need me. They're doing their own thing. You know, I mean, the job don't need me. I'm still on terminal leave at this point. So if I went to sleep and didn't wake up, I didn't want to die, but I didn't give a shit if I was there or not because nobody needed me. I was invisible to the world. And I was on terminal leave, so if something happened, well, why did it matter? Everyone was going to get $400,000, right? So I said, yeah, this isn't right. This can't be right. I knew that there was more. So I sat with my husband, you know, right before spring break was over, and I said, Rudy, this cannot be life. He says, yeah, you haven't left, you know, in a week, you haven't left the room. Something's going on with you. You should probably talk to somebody. He had been in the army before, but 10 years prior. And he, you know, he followed me around the last 5 years of my military career. But in his, you know, he's old school infantry army. He got out and he went through that transition, but he was like, just deal with it, you know? But he was like, yeah, you should probably talk to somebody. Because I told him, I says, I just want to get in my truck. Because I had an old beat up 95 Chevy. And I said, I want to get in my truck with Roscoe and just drive and not look back and not give a shit about you or the kids. I said, nothing against you, but I'm done. Like, I don't care. I don't care if it goes off a damn cliff. He goes, yeah, you should talk to somebody. So I went to the VA and I got an appointment. And probably about for 6 months, I went in once a week. And they gave me stuff for anti-depression and anti-anxiety, and it just started getting better. And probably about a year later, I left that job and went 5 hours away, left the family and worked 5 hours away, and stayed in a little apartment by myself, just kind of deal with the residual of all of it. And the
Mm-hmm.
family was still together, but I needed to be away for a little while, and it just, and then COVID hit, and just everything got a lot better. Just a lot better.
I find it wild. I'm not surprised, like being a veteran and what I know now, but it is wild to see how 20 years in the military, like none of that came out, and then like that transition to civilian life, that was the trigger, or like the moment when your body, whatever it is, like, but maybe the moment of your body, like finally not masking it anymore and seeing it come to the surface. That's, again, like I said, even though it seems wild, I'm not surprised, you know, having known about the hard transition for a soldier. But it's interesting also how you say, I'm going to need to come up with better adjectives other than interesting.
Well, I did try to talk to somebody when I was in.
You did?
I went to talk to a doctor, and I told him, I says, I need to talk to somebody. And I talked to him, and I said, but I'm uncomfortable with switching and talking to a new psychologist, psychiatrist. Every single time I come here, because every single time I come here, I'm going to have to tell someone the backstory every single time.
Oh my God, yes.
So he was like, I understand that, you know, it'd be me and you. And then at the end of that appointment, he says, well, I'm about to go on deployment, so I'll have to schedule you with somebody else for the next one. So I left, and I'm at that time, I had grown up. And I was told by my leadership, I mean, I worked in a male dominant field. I had become a single parent, and not in a good way, became a single parent. I had to basically not leave in the night, but I had to tell him he was moving into base housing with me in order for him not to know that I was leaving. And then the harassment started, and the threats against my life started. And then I was told to be nice to him, all these things. And I had a boss tell me, don't tell me what's going on. I don't want to have to go to court if something happens. And then I had to show the cops to his house when he tried to commit suicide. I'm like, I'm the battered wife. Hello, why am I showing you to his house? I mean, all kinds of things. And when I tried to talk to someone, I was being put on certain duties because I was asking for help. So
oh hell.
So I quit asking for help. I quit letting them know anything was happening because it was compromising my ability to raise my children as a single parent. So I sucked it up. I mean, I had a chief who, I took my gas mask off because of a panic attack, and he said, he jumped underneath the desk and he said, put your fucking gas mask back on before I kick you out of my Air Force. I put it back on. And then he pulled me aside after we were in an exercise. He pulled me aside afterwards and he said, come on, me and the first sergeant is taking you to talk to a psychologist. They forced me to go talk to somebody. And I did. And the doctor, after talking, he deemed that I wasn't a risk or anything. So they didn't have to force me to talk to anybody. And that was it. But I mean, those were the type of things that I was dealing with when I was the only female at some of the places that I worked. So it was like, I didn't have a family I could go back to and ask for help. And it was me and the kids. I had nowhere else to go. So I had to make it work.
That structural stigma sucks. Like I had recently had Michael Hood on here, another fellow veteran, and he talked about how, you know, going to see mental health when he was on active duty and then being approached by his higher up, like, did you go see mental health? And them, like, you know, it's held against you. Like you're seen as a liability almost. Well, you are seen as a liability. And, that sucks. That really sucks that instead of, you know, just kind of understanding that a soldier is a human as well, and having that deal with it mindset and put your mask back on, that stinks that there's so many people that have dealt with being doubted and seen as a liability just because you are human and you have health too. You have mental health and physical health. And if you would have broke your leg, they would have sent you, well, maybe sent you to sick call after you ran a couple miles, but you know, like same thing for mental health. It stinks that structural stigma within the military. And then honestly, outside of the military, for anybody that's experienced it at their job and just, again, seen as a liability.
Yeah. No, once I retired, it was like this, you know, in the beginning, when I started talking to somebody, I was kind of real quiet about it and private about it. And then I got into the group that we're in, and I seen so many people being loud and proud about it. And then I was kind of like, you know, if anyone has an effing problem about it, well, guess what? I really don't care. And I just started becoming so free, so much freer about not caring what anyone thinks about. And that's when I started writing more, and I started the podcast, and I started the magazine. And that's when the smile came back. You know, that's when I realized that nobody's paying my damn bill, so why should I give a shit what they say, what they think about me and my mental health? Because I may not, I have social anxiety, which when I get close proximity of people, I get all clammy. I can't sit in a regular office because if you come around the corner and come into my cubicle, I'm like, whoa, why did you just come in here like that? You know what I'm saying? Like, announce yourself. Don't come, don't drop in my cubicle. So I work from home. And that's okay, because guess what? I can work circles around all you people in cubicles.
And I'm just not like you. Like, that doesn't, I'm not saying that from me, but that's like for us to say to other people, like, it's okay that I can't work in a cubicle. Yeah. I'm just not like you, you know, writing the one book, not 22 yet, Chris CJ, but writing the one book that I wrote so far over the that was published last July, overcoming that fear and those stigmas and how people would see me and all the ugly of me that is in there, the real, the good, the bad, and the ugly, that was scary. And then finally getting to the point of like, it's okay. Like, I don't care. Like, this is me and this is who I am. And I'm feeling called to put this down to hopefully help somebody else. And so,
yeah,
I admire that, CJ. Way to be a boss, babe. So I have a question backing it up. You were saying that your husband is an old school veteran, you know, had served 10 years before you and kind of had more of a mindset of like, deal with it before he had finally said, like, maybe you should go see somebody. When does he still have the deal with it mindset, or through you and your journey, is he able to see that deal with it isn't an option?
Yeah. So he had been dealing with a lot of his own mental health things that he suffered through while his time in the Army. He was infantry. He went through infantry training, and then he went to Panama, and he was deployed in Belize and a couple other places. And he never dealt with his own stuff. And through seeing me open up and me talk about stuff and be so free and open, and I finally told him straight, you need, look, you're a grumpy ass man. Like, you're just miserable, and you're miserable because you're not dealing with stuff. You need to talk to somebody, or you're going to be a lonely man.
Was this before, like, or after?
No, after. Way after. After I went through my own stuff, after I left that job because it wasn't feeding my soul, I went up and sat in that apartment, and I did a lot of praying on my knees alone in that apartment, and then come back when COVID hit, and I had found myself in that apartment, and then we were all coming back together as a family. And he and I just said, you know, I found myself. I've found my center. I'm not perfect. I have my days. But now I'm realizing that you haven't found yourself yet. Mm-hmm. We had some really long heart-to-hearts, and he sought help. And yeah, and it's wonderful because he had been living with it way longer than me, way longer
right.
than me. Because he got out in August of 2001, right before September 11th.
Wow. Well, that's incredible. You know, like when I did decide to put my words down on paper, I thought to myself, like, if I just help one person on this mission, then that will make me happy. And for you, like, just that story there alone, you already helped at least one person, you know, someone that is such an integral part of your life and maybe never would have got there without you going through your struggle and your journey and your post-traumatic growth. So that's incredible. I hope that I, if we're being real and honest here, and hopefully he doesn't listen to this episode, I hope that I will have that same effect on my husband, yeah. who is also a combat veteran. Mm-hmm. I hope that I will have that effect.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah. It's hard.
It is.
It's harder with people that you're the closest to. It definitely is, you know, because it took a lot of moments of, is this it? But sticking it out and knowing yeah. that it was worth the struggle.
Right. Right. And just waiting and being patient for when it is their time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
One thing that you said that's beautiful, you should see my notes on this paper. It's a hot mess, hot mess. I just try and jot stuff down. And when I hear it, that resonates with me. And it's so beautiful how you said, like, that's when the smile came back. Like, that is incredible. I hope that everyone listening and watching this can feel and experience that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's so you wrote 2000 books. Well, what, 22?
Before I hit 100. Absolutely.
So,
but, you know, I just want to be clear because a lot yeah. of people, so I write novellas, so not novels. I'm not a novel girl because I'm I make this reference and a lot of people laugh. They're like, whoa, that's a little too much. But I call it straight in, no kissing. Because I get in, I tell the story, and I get out. Like, I'm not a novel girl. I don't do 40 to 60,000. Yeah. I do, like, 20,000 words and less. That's probably why I have 20 books, so 22 books. So.
Oh, don't downplay yourself, girl. Don't downplay yourself. Like, that's incredible.
I love a short story, and it's probably because of my ADD that I love a short
Absolutely.
Story.
Absolutely. And there are...
I call it straight in, no kiss.
I love it. So, and you got your own. How long have you had your podcast?
So we started
in your magazine.
We started the podcast November 2020, and we are on issue number 3 of the Author's Porch magazine, just released January 1st of 2022, and the first issue came out July of 2021. We issue every quarter. We have author features, book reviews, all kinds of amazing things. So our next issue is coming out April of 2022, and we're already accepting articles. People are already submitting for it.
Awesome. We'll make sure we put all that stuff into the show notes, the links to watch your podcast, listen to your podcast, check out your magazine and how to be featured in it. That's super cool.
Yeah. In each issue always features I always do an editorial review of one, if not two, veteran books that I do myself. I personally do a review on for free because I always want to make sure I give back to the veterans as a veteran myself. The January issue had Ryan Hendrickson's Tip of the Spear. That book's life changing. Like that one to give you
Okay,
chills.
hold on. Let me get my pen ready.
Hendrickson.
Ryan, what?
And
Tip of the spear?
yeah, that book right there. And I'm telling you, if read it or not read it, but listen to it in audiobook because it will change your life. It did mine.
Right. Well, good thing I have an Audible ex subscription.
Same.
Awesome. Thank you for letting me know that. Okay. So for CJ and the things that you do to fill your soul other than writing and connecting with others on the podcast and reading, because clearly we're both book nerds. One of the things I like to ask my guests on my podcast is like what you do for your physical, mental, and spiritual like self-care. I feel like that's something to be highlighted. It's very important for all of us, but I also hope that some of the things that we say will give ideas to other people. What do you do for spiritual, mental, physical wellness that you know have been helpful and are a part of your success so that you try to continue to implement regularly?
So for my spiritual, I'm a faithful person. I'm not a religious person, right? Because and the reason is because I don't believe in the institution of religion, but I do have my faith. My faith is my God, and my God keeps me straight every single day. I write my scriptures down. I read them. I have my conversations with my higher being. And I make sure that I ground myself every single day and know who I am, what I'm working towards, and what I'm doing. And I have other people who have the same belief system as me. I grew up with a Christian background, but me myself, I don't follow one religious faith only because the institution of faith of religion itself has been convoluted. That's just my personal beliefs.
Sure.
I believe in every religion that's out, every faith system that's out there, and as far as the physical, I wouldn't say that I have a routine. Unfortunately, this is one piece that I fall very short on because of my chronic pain. But I have a little dog who's handicapped. On Mother's Day of this year or of last year, he became paralyzed. So he keeps me kind of busy picking him up, putting him down, walking him around the yard in his little wheelchair, I call it, but it's a stroller, stuff like that. I have a treadmill that I walk on as much as I can without putting myself in more pain. So I wish I could do more. And when I can get in with my chiropractor, as long as I get the vouchers and stuff like that, then I get on that treadmill as much as possible. But I will say that that's one area that I fail the most in is the physical.
Well, I wasn't expecting you to give an example for all three categories, physical, mental, and spiritual, but you definitely are nailing it. How about so for mentally, you say you like ground yourself daily on who you are. How like is does that look more like just like talking to yourself and like being in touch with how you feel and what's going on?
So I wake up in the morning. I drink my cup of coffee. I watch the morning news, David Muir, ABC
Hold
News.
up, hold up. One cup of coffee?
I only have one cup of caffeinated coffee a day, only because,
Caffeinated. Gotcha.
now decaf, you have that all day.
I
But one cup of caffeinated coffee a day, and then I watch my morning news, which is actually the nightly news with David Muir on ABC. If you hear this, call me David Muir because we need to do a newscast. But anyways.
David.
I watch that and then I go about getting ready. While I'm getting ready, I'm having a conversation inside my head, and I'm not crazy yet, But I have this conversation inside my head of what I'm grateful for. This all started
That's not
based off of
crazy at
a,
all.
this all started because of a 12-week communication class that I went to. I went on a course, a 12-week, that 12-week communication course, Master Talk. And it's a good friend of mine, Brendan Kay, I call him because his last name is very hard to say. God bless him. And every day when we started this course, once a week, they said, "What are you grateful for?" Before we even start getting into the communicating, how to be a better communicator, all this fancy high-tech stuff, what are you grateful for? And you don't expect that because you're paying a lot of money for this class to be a better communicator. How can I be a better talker? Because that's my job for the podcast, right? And I just stuck with it. So I started doing as much as I can. A daily gratitude live, and that's what CJ in the morning is. And I do it in my head first, but sometimes I'll start getting, I'm grateful for this, but I need to tell these people this, and I'll get all grumpy a little bit, right? And I'll realize that there's something not sitting right in my spirit. I may be grateful for some stuff, but I'm also feeling a little, like I'm
Like
grateful, but
Rage Against the Machine.
yep. I'm grateful for this, but I need people to know that you can be grateful, but you're also ungrateful for this. You're all, and I'm feeling a little in my spirit. So what I do is when I'm feeling that, I'm going through this whole storyline about what I'm going to talk about on my CJ in the morning. And I'm feeling a little ungrateful, I guess, in my spirit. And I'll come and I'll find a verse in the Bible that helps me just kind of ground myself a little bit more and feel a little bit better. And then when I'm having those moments, I don't go live a lot of times because I just need to be in the silent, I guess, because my mind isn't in the right place. It's just busy. So that's kind of, and then on the mornings when I'm just feeling fully alive and not pain or any other busy, then I get on and I talk to everybody. That's willing to come on and see me in the
So is
morning.
it
And
every morning?
it's not every morning. I try to every morning, but when I wake up and my mind's busy or the pain is just too much and I'm just kind of,
Is it your podcast or live Facebook?
it's right on my Facebook page. I take it to the podcast format, but I just do it right on my personal Facebook page and my author Facebook page. It's called CJ in the Morning, and I talk about gratitude and I talk about coffee and just whatever is on my mind.
That's fantastic. I can't wait to check that out.
Yeah.
Very cool. Speaking of Bible verses. So, Celebrate the Struggle, the name of my podcast, where it was derived from. First of all, that the Bible verse, James 1:2, which is, and I'm about to put it in Jennifer Hobbs International Version, but it says, celebrate the hard times, for you know that the hard times will bring perseverance, and perseverance brings strength. And like that was a huge turning point in my life, which I talk about in the book, where that came to me at the perfect time in my life. And I was like almost super lost and almost throwing a pity party. And like, what do I do? Like, how do I even, I'm so scared. And then I did this women's Bible book study, totally stepped out of my comfort zone, went to the local church where I hardly knew anyone, and did a women's Bible study on the book of James. And it was seriously like the first day, maybe second, where that we came across that verse, and it just hit me like a ton of bricks. And I realized, wow, like, stop being a bitch. Okay. Like, you need to be happy in these hard times that you're going through, because you know that it's going to be okay. And that everything you've gone through in your life that's been hard and challenging has made you who you are. And so that verse really resonated with me. As I was trying to, when I just, someone had asked me I'm not trying to make this about myself right now, but I talk to a lot. I never know when to shut up either. But when someone had said to me, well, probably 9 months ago or so, you know, you should really think about doing your own podcast. I was like, I don't know. It's not for me. And then I started to want more ways to share my voice, but not just my voice, but to encourage, you know, everyone's not going to write a book just because they don't want to. It's not that they can't, it's just that not everybody wants to, you know, write a book or any sort of magazine or any platform to share their voice. So I wanted to be able to have some place where people could share their story and offer understanding and hope to other people. And I took forever thinking about the title, and I just kept coming back to Celebrate the Struggle, not just from that verse, James 1:2, but it's also the last three words of my book. And I just knew like, no, it has to be this, because this is what I want it to be. I want people to share their stories and get comfortable with the uncomfortable, and let's not beat around the bush. Let's talk about them. So that's my little side note on Bible verses and how that's where the title of Celebrate the Struggle came from. And I don't think I've shared that on any of the other podcasts. So there's a little tidbit of information for the listeners.
I think that's beautiful.
It is. And that's such a beautiful verse, and so true. So true. Like, every time we fall, every time we're having our lame days, like, it doesn't matter. Someone said to me the other day, like, it doesn't matter if you crawl, walk, or run, you just get back up. You just get back up.
Yeah. And you have to, because somebody out there needs to see you fall, and even more, they need to see you get back up.
Wow, that's...
But I think there's another Bible verse that I want to share with you, because I think it belongs to you as well. And I call it my verse, because it's been my verse for a very long time. When I told you, I sat in that apartment up in San Antonio, actually, because I went to work for a university up in that area. And I sat in that, it didn't even have a bedroom. It was a studio apartment. I was all by myself. And I sat up there and I studied the Bible a lot, and I would fast and I would ask for words to help me understand what my purpose was. And this verse flashed in front of my eyes as I was sleeping. It's Jeremiah 1:9. I mean, not flashed in front of my eyes, but like it came to me. Other verses would come to me audibly in my sleep, but this one came to me. It's Jeremiah 1. This is the book, and I still write in this book because it's not full yet. So I still write all my verses.
I love Chevron.
I still write verses in this until it's full, because what I do is I take the verses and I interpret them and what they mean to me, and I'll eventually will publish it one day. But Jeremiah 1:9 says, then the Lord reached out his hand and touched my mouth and said to me, I have put my words in your mouth. And the way I interpret it is, speak as a vessel for the Lord, so the people may listen and be brought closer to him. Do not blaspheme or give false witness. Ensure that the fault that you follow his words, and do not forsake the journey he has set before you.
That, you know, I really needed to hear that today. I really needed to hear that today, this month, this year.
I think that's for you as well. I think that that's another reason why you need to do this.
If you knew about the conversation like I had this morning and things, you would know that there's a reason why you were encouraged to tell me that. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh man, well, you know, one of the questions, I gotta be honest with you, just because I'm an honest person and kind of a hot mess. One of the questions that I have on my list of questions that I'm kind of debating on like getting rid of is I've typically been asking people like what their hopes and dreams are, like if money and resources weren't an option, what their hopes and dreams are. However, the reason why I'm thinking about like getting rid of it is because like I don't want people to feel like in the conversations I've had, I don't want to send a message of like, okay, you've done this, now what, you know, like, and, you know, and so, I'm definitely working on like editing that, but like, so you have a podcast, you have a magazine, what do you hope to see from CJ and from the purpose and mission that's been put on your heart to share with the world? Again, you're going to have to help me modify this question, but let's hear what you got.
You know, I want the magazine to be a place where everyone's welcome, regardless of how high they are in their career. I didn't create it as a place where you got to pay thousands of dollars to get into. And unless your publicist knew the editor in chief, that's the only way you got in. I wanted the 50 or 60 year old author who wrote the book for the first time that is scared to death to get on camera because they don't like the way their face looks, but they wrote a book and they love it more than anything, to be able to get in the magazine because they believe in themselves. You know, my first book, if you were to read it, I drew it myself. It's horrible. It's horrible. I'm telling you, but I love it. Like, it has my whole heart. It has so many spelling errors and grammar errors. It's horrible. It's so funny. That's how funny it is. But I want it to be a place where people believe again in themselves. That's what I want it to be. I want it to be where people know that they belong, you know, and the same thing with the podcast. I put the link right on the website for people to book themselves. That's how it is. You book yourself.
Oh, I'm such a sissy.
And I have publicists that email me and I send them the booking link that's on the website that Cindy Golightly from Nowhere, Texas books herself, who wrote her first book. You know, I've had 9-year-olds on the show. Their grandma booked them.
I mean, that's awesome.
Because we all have a place in this world. And I need everyone to realize that. That's what I want it to be. I don't ever want it to die. The Author's Porch wasn't created for CJ by CJ. It was created by CJ for the community. And I want it to go well past me. I want it to be here when I'm gone. I want more people to be involved in it. I don't want it just to be CJ. I want the whole community to wrap its arms around it and want to be involved in it because they want everyone to have a spot. That's what I want it to be.
Well, geesh, drop the mic again, CJ. Like, you, that was an incredible answer. I admire that so much. And I also feel like you and I are on similar paths, because what I hear in your answer is something that I read in a book a year and a half ago, yes, as I was researching post-traumatic growth. I was reading Struggle Well, Thriving in the Aftermath of Trauma by Ken Falk and Josh Goldberg. And something they say in there that I'm hearing through and through in your words that I am on a mission to do. They say that the pinnacle of success is not when you've made it to the tip top of that mountain, you know, whatever that looks like for you, six figures, blah, blah, blah. But the pinnacle of success is when you turn right back around, go back down that mountain, and you help someone else get up that mountain. And that's what I want to be. And I can hear through your story and your journey that we have that in common. And that is Beautiful. I'm so lucky to have had you on here, and I can't wait to check out CJ in the morning. Although I'm going to be the one over here with my caffeinated coffee on mute, like, this tramp needs to calm it down. No, I'm
Needs to go
so.
back to bed. What the hell's wrong with her being so happy in the morning?
I can't wait to check it out. I'm so grateful that you were on here, and I just can't thank you enough. And thank you for coming on here to get comfortable with the uncomfortable, share your story. So much of that I can relate to, and I'm sure other people can. Like, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. You're beautiful. Like, wow. I look forward to that 100th book, but I'm honestly, CJ in the morning is like, is it tomorrow? Can we do it tomorrow? No, I'm just kidding. I won't
I was like,
pressure you.
what day is
I
it?
won't pressure you. I won't
I
pressure you.
was like,
I
why did
don't, dude, I don't even know.
tomorrow
Don't
was
ask me what day it is.
Saturday?
All I know
Oh
is it's a school day and my kids aren't quarantined anymore and they are out of the house. Thank you. Bye-bye.
I don't blame you. Mine are in college. Woo!
Oh. Man, I really hope COVID doesn't take over again and send my kids back home, because otherwise we're gonna need to do some virtual mental health appointments and be concerned about some things. Well, CJ, thank you so much for coming on and sharing all that with us and getting comfortable with the uncomfortable.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for being amazing and providing this beautiful space.